Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the History of Germany podcast. I'm Travis Dow, and today I have a special guest because last episode I mentioned really briefly how awesome I think the History of Vikings is, that podcast by Noah. And I gave it a fat plug and was just like, we're going to move on. And we didn't really talk about that in the Frankish times, like Charlemagne time, because I was just trying to move on. And then instantly on Twitter, someone's like, no, please don't skip the Vikings, even though that's like, we're like 400 years, 300 years past that now. But so I thought, why not? It would actually be a lot of fun. And it's definitely a topic that I just totally love and enjoy. And so I got Noah Tetzner on the show. Welcome to History of Germany, Noah.
Thank you so much, Travis. And I'm a humongous fan of the show, so I'm just so excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, hey, likewise. We do have some, we've covered our areas in parallel ways sometimes, like maybe I'll even tell the listeners, if you've never listened to the History of Vikings, it's 21 episodes in. You can find it on thehistoryofvikings.com, and you can find it on iTunes as The History of Vikings. It says by Recorded History Podcast Network. That's the one. But I like your logo. You'll see the nice History of Vikings logo. So what I appreciate about it is it's what I tried to do in this show, which in certain time eras I found was really, really hard. Like, instead of just like finding, you know, glancing articles online or browsing a Wikipedia article, it's like you have to read books to do it properly. And but I really appreciate that you've kind of tackled not just Norse mythology in one episode, but you've tackled it over and over, different aspects of it, like the blending of Christianity in later times, or when they come across, you know, and are plundering monasteries and such.
I think you have a whole episode on Valhalla and Old Norse, which I even started with, like, you did exactly the same thing that I did, kind of, which is wait, that's your newest episode. Yeah, your newest episode is where I started, actually, which I was like, what is Proto-Germanic? You know, what does that even mean? And yeah. I started right where you did, which was in Scandinavia. And that was just a question, just a topic that I thought was so fascinating. Like, what, you know, where's the beginning of the culture? And to me, like, language is such a part of the culture. Like, if you don't speak a language, it's really hard to, like, you can't get all the puns. Okay, there's one example. Like, you're not going to get all jokes, for instance. But so that was kind of like where I really focused. And then I was like, all right, and here's where old Germanic, what is it, like Middle Germanic, split with Old Norse, and they moved, you know, down across the Baltic and North Seas into Germany. And so Old Norse is a different story, you know, and I just kind of like ended it there. But yeah, there was a whole nother peoples, you know, so that's what we'll kind of talk about today. I don't know. Is there, you know, what were you thinking behind, like, how were you going to tackle the history of a culture?
Well, when I first started the History of Vikings, obviously the mythology is what got me into it, the rich Norse mythology. But upon studying the Vikings, you know, I was, of course, easily enamored with the brutal Viking raids and the...
Like, how were they so successful, you know?
Exactly. And I was doing that, and I was kind of going that whole route, sort of covering the raids, the warfare, the naval warfare, that whole sort of thing. But as I continued to read and research about the Vikings, I actually got the opportunity to bring him on my show. There's this awesome book called, I believe it's The Age of the Vikings by a fellow named Anders Winroth. He's a professor of medieval history at Yale University. And it kind of goes through the whole everyday life of the Vikings.
That's cool.
And
that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. And that's something that I really, I mean, to some it might sound kind of boring, but I mean, the Vikings were largely an agricultural people, just like many of the people of medieval Europe. And it's interesting to note that, I guess, when talking about the people, the Norse people of medieval Scandinavia, who we might call Vikings today, perhaps Vikings isn't the most accurate term to refer to them as. Perhaps the word Norsemen or Norse woman might be more accurate, because the word Vikings, Viking comes from the Old Norse root word vik. And of course, once you put all of those roots together, it ends up meaning something like a pirate who lurks in a fjord or a cove. So Viking is really more of a job description. It's really more of an activity, like one goes a Viking, one goes a raiding and a pirate. So it's really interesting to note that although many Norse people would have been able to entertain aspects of both an agricultural lifestyle and a raiding lifestyle, that not all of them were considered Vikings. So that's something that really fascinated me as I really like dove into the research, and just the towns and the burial mounds. And on my show, I talked to a British coin specialist, and he told us of sort of the coinage of the Vikings and the money and how they would found cities. Actually,
They
built up, you know, they built up what is modern day York in northern England, Jorvik at the time. And that's something that's super fascinating, you know, just sort of the everyday life of the Vikings.
I know you might actually get in trouble, because where does that history actually stop? You have like the Normans, like Normandy, and from there, like, are you going to cover the whole like Battle of Hastings and England? I mean, but there's like Danelaw, there's you know, Dublin. In fact, and like, I'm thinking of all these podcasts where Russian Rulers podcast, his first 10 episodes were all about Vikings, Norsemen. And History of Ireland podcast, the same thing. He had to cover like so much detail about, you know, these first raids and how that changed the culture, and you know, really, yeah, including, you know, Ireland's capital today. Yeah, at some point you're like, what are you going to cover? Southern Italy and, you know, all these different, because I mean, I'm joking, but just to paint a picture of like, these guys really changed, you know, what we consider like modern day Russia was kind of the first dynasties were Vikings, and they're the ones that broke away from Golden Horde, Mongol, you know, sort of dynasties. And it's just like, there's so much there to unpack. I don't even like, you kind of have to, focus, maybe go, you know, like when you really exhaust mythology, you know, maybe go into like, okay, here's this one look at you know, geez, like even just the language, like English language, just you could do History of English, History of English talks about the Danelaw and like North and like York and like how, you know, like, yeah, shirt and skirt are really the same word, just like one's Anglo-Saxon and one's Norman or, you know, something like that. Right. Yeah, man, it's a crazy cool kind of thing to. So I was wondering, like, is it kind of a, like, maybe this is oversimplifying or just a way to think about it, but the first couple of waves would be Vikings. These are like seriously pirates and plunderers and that kind of thing. But then they did settle. So either it's the same people that changed their job title in a way, or just like later waves were really like just Norsemen, just agriculture, you know, farmers, and just kind of settling down and colonizing Europe in a way from Scandinavia.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that a lot of people are super pedantic about the word Viking, in that they obsess over it, which of course I gave a nice little introduction just to get people thinking in sort of a different way, that, you know, not all Norse people at the time were,
would probably call us out on Twitter if we didn't say that at some point, you know, like, oh, you know, Vikings is just a subset, or Vikings is just a job title. Yeah. I mean, I'm agreeing with you. People do get kind of pedantic there. But also, you know, growing up, I mean, for hundreds of years, like, we just kind of, In fact, that's kind of BS, because if you go to Copenhagen or Stockholm, they're going to have their Viking museum, and they know exactly. They're like, yep, this is not, you know, even if they fully know, of course the museum curators all know the history of the word. But they're still like, well, this is what sells tickets, and we know that, you know, this, when people think Viking, they think, you know, medieval and early medieval, like, Norsemen, like anybody in Scandinavia. And that's just like, okay, you know.
So, yeah,
it's a good marketing term. Like, why would you exactly. throw it away if you're Danish or you know, right. Norwegian or something? So, but yeah, no, I do feel like, yeah, people would be like, hey, that's just a job title.
I know.
So I do want to ask you about mythology. I think before, maybe just it's kind of interesting. Have you looked at, like, who are even the primary sources, or who are even the sources of going back then? Because if I recall, Normans, like, there's runes and stuff, but runes really just had, like, magical meaning, or it might be a name on a gravestone rather than, like, a way to write down whole stories at first, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, so in terms of runes, so
writing in general, like, when did they even, when did they write about themselves?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that actually brings up an interesting point, and that's, of course, it's interesting when studying the Vikings, because ironically, most of the sources that we have that talk about them were actually written by their victims, right? The mm-hmm. monks, and just like the source that I'm sure we'll get into today, the Annals of Fulda, that was written by either some monks or the what would have been the German royalty at the time, who fought with the Vikings. But in terms of Viking writing and runes, you know, all over Scandinavia, we find these massive rocks, these massive boulders, and they have all sorts of chiseled inscriptions on them. Some of them are actually like runic writing that what would have been the sort of Viking alphabet. And it's interesting to note that there's different kinds of runes. There's different styles. You have the short twig rune, which is, of course, what is on my new logo on my Twitter page. But also there's many different kinds of runes. I think one is called, like, Fulthark and something like that. But then there's also runestones that have pictures, like picture stones that sort of depict various scenes from mythology. Like, there's one, I want to say it was found in Gotland, and that actually shows Odin, the chief god in Norse mythology, riding his eight-legged horse, Sleipnir. So, yeah, that's sort of the... Oh,
like a hieroglyph. And you'd see that one kind of image more than once? Or was it just like a one-off? I mean, that's crazy interesting, actually.
Yeah. So the Vikings probably wrote their runes more than we would like to give them credit. That would be my instinct, seeing as...
Yeah. If they wrote it on wood and stuff, it's just gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And of course, we only have the stone that survives. Yep. And so that's sort of the whole Viking runes and their...
I didn't even realize there was more than one kind of alphabet. Now that you mention it, like, I definitely... I know the Fulthark. What's it called? The one that's kind of the standard that probably everybody has in their mind. Look up, you know. Fulthark. The short twig. Yeah, okay. That's like, I'm just like looking at it. Like, I'm like, yeah, you got my curiosity piqued already. because I even mention runes? Like, it's that's just something that's crazy interesting that they did kind of have their own alphabet. And
if I may add, it's actually,
and same, it was like, it wasn't it, I mean, isn't the theory that it was through trade, like, they saw some other alphabet, like, you know, Phoenician or Greek or whatever, and then, because it's not, like, totally alien looking either, it's kind of, you know.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting you should say that, because the Vikings were very much traders and explorers, so they really did have a lot of influence and come in contact with various other cultures. And it's interesting to note that in the what is now a mosque, at the time it was a Christian temple in formerly Constantinople, today Istanbul, there is on the ledge, I think it's the Hagia Sophia. Yeah.
Yes, I know this story. I mean, I've seen it in a documentary. Yeah.
Yeah, on the ledge of the church, on the balcony, mm-hmm. actually chiseled into the marble balcony, there's Viking runes written. So it's really interesting to think that, and the Vikings actually did travel to Constantinople. They had a word for it, which would have been, the name escapes me, but something guard, because of course that was their name for city. But anyways, since it was the biggest city in the medieval world, it would have been, the name would have meant great city. Miklagard. Yes, Miklagard. But it's interesting to note that that very well could have been a Viking sitting during a boring church service, writing possibly what it actually we think it may have been his name in Viking runes on the balcony whilst watching the church service. So that's super interesting.
A little bit of cheeky graffiti there. I mean, there's that. A fictional book I loved. The movie was called The 13th Warrior or something, about this Arabic, like this Muslim warrior or Muslim nobleman or something that goes to, you know, he goes to the Vikings, and it's kind of like this weird story because they kind of fight like Neanderthals or some like really primitive, scary monster beast, or like people that wear bear hides or live in caves, whatever it was. But I'm like, that's complete fiction. But on the other hand, it's like totally not that I don't know about the Neanderthal part or, you know, maybe, you know, fighting some more primitive people. There were, you know, like if you're maybe they were thinking of like, oh, this is one of the campaigns against the Suomi in the north. Is that what that, you know, there's like Native Americans, you know, there's native tribes in like northern Norway and Sweden, too.
Yeah, that's
so it. Maybe it is, you know, they're fighting some Inuit type of people. I don't know. They've definitely found, coins, you know, in Scandinavia, and, there was, they thought they saw the word Allah or something, and then it was like, no, that was just a, you know, just kind of looks like blah, 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 and so they're like, was there a Muslim Viking already, you know?
Right.
But they did travel so extensively that even, like, the more I learned about nonfiction real life, I read that book when I was a kid, the more I kind of like went back, thought about that, you know, rewatched the movie or whatever. They have like Antonio Banderas, is that, fuck, I don't remember what the movie was called, but yeah, it's just this great story about this Muslim living among the Norse, and not actually that unplausible. Probably it would have been more plausible the other way around, that there's Viking living somewhere in.
So are you referring to the movie The 13th Warrior?
The 13th Warrior is the movie, maybe. Yeah, so the book is called something else. I forget. The book is just like 10 times better than the movie. That's why I'm like...
Yeah. Well, I don't know anything about the book, but I know the movie The 13th Warrior. I believe the main character...
I'm going to look it up real quick, but yeah.
Is it... I believe the main character's name is Ibn Fadlan. He was actually a real person. That is actually a real thing. And there's
it was a stretch of a... Eaters of the Dead by Michael Crichton. Oh, yeah, it's Michael Crichton. The book is amazing. You know, like Jurassic Park and all that. Like, when I was a kid, I was a huge Michael Crichton fan and then came across Eaters of the Dead. Maybe the book is more closer to the actual story than the movie. I remember reading some criticism of, like, this is... You know, I don't remember. I don't remember which is which. I can tell you the book's better. But yeah, you're right. I'm Ahmed Ibn Fadlan.
Yeah.
And he's, from the Caliph, poet to the Caliph of Baghdad. Yeah. So he's a real guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Volga Vikings. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. There's an awesome documentary for those of you out there who love documentaries like I do. I think it's just called Vikings by Neil Oliver, and he actually does a whole episode where he travels to Istanbul, and they talk about Ibn Fadlan, and they go through actually some of his personal writings, and then you also get to see him talking about the runic inscriptions on the temple.
Sophia. Yeah. No, that's, anybody out there that's kind of like, this is piquing an interest, like, I love that story. And yeah, Eaters of the Dead was a great book. Probably people do know the movie. Antonio Banderas, I don't know, it was kind of weird. And definitely a fictionalization of everything. But, what did you think about, are you watching Vikings, History Channel? Who makes Vikings? I think it's History Channel.
Yeah, History Channel, that's right.
Do you enjoy that just for the...
Honestly, like, I haven't you may be surprised to know that I actually haven't watched that many episodes. I don't follow this series. I thought about trying to get into it, but then again, I didn't watch Thor Ragnarok because I didn't want it to warp my portrayal of the Norse gods.
I think you should do an episode on, you know, comparing the nonsense of, you know, whatever, total fictional Marvel Norse mythology to the real thing, just to... I mean, people would tune in. It would be gimmicky if nothing else, but I'd be like, hey, if you really do a nice, well done analysis of, you know, like, okay, real Thor, you know, be like, blah, blah, blah. That'd be kind of interesting, but.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. What do you enjoy in general? Like, I have a hard time getting into them sometimes, but I like the idea of like the Tudors and Rome and all those kind of super mm-hmm. silly, like not really nonfiction, or the crown might be a good one. Do you enjoy those in general? Bother you that it's not accurate sometimes?
No, I'm not okay. One of these people that like gets super upset and can't watch something
sometimes. I can't. Well, the Vikings was hard. I don't know. The thing is, if you like drama shows where it's like, oh, she's cheating on him with this other guy, and that's kind of what the Vikings is. And I kind of lost interest after so many seasons. Even though it was like, man, if you just want an action movie, it's a very brutal kind of show, and people might just tune in just for the gore. I was like, and then as soon as I looked into it, I'm like, who is, I forget his name, but
Ragnar Lothbrok.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I was like, no one knows much about him. It's his sons, like Roland and all these people, you know, many sons that then became conquerors, and they're all like son of Ragnar or something. And then I kind of realized, oh, so they're just making up everything wholesale. And then you go to, it's just totally, we know nothing. And then you go to like, I hang out at, there's a subreddit, Ask Historians, and then people are like, how accurate is this? And they just tear it apart. They're like, no, this is Hollywood. So on the other hand, like there's a place for that too. I just kind of, you know, I feel like if people watch Vikings and then they're curious for what really happened, those are going to be listeners of your show. So, you know.
Right.
Like, even if it's the history, even if that kind of stuff should not be running on the History Channel, we already know the History Channel went to hell years ago, so it's all good.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like, we have no expectations anymore, so it's all good.
Which is sad, because back when I was, like, just little kid,
same.
They actually had, like greatest tank battles.
Yeah, I still watch. Just last week, I discovered that there's a bunch of In Search of History and History's Mysteries, like, from the 90s on YouTube. And, you just search in, like, history, you know, History Channel documentaries, you'll get the good ones that hasn't existed for, like, 20 years. Right. I was like, oh, man, this was good quality, like... How did they go from this to Ancient Aliens? What's wrong with you people? Or worse, you know, Ancient Aliens isn't even the worst anymore. They're like reality TV now. But anyways, sorry. It's like, a moment of quiet for the History Channel, for the death of the History Channel. But yeah, they used to have good. I was kind of curious if you watched that. And then maybe if you complain about the inaccuracies, but you do talk about mythology a lot.
That's true.
What interests you, and have you compared it to like the myth? Like, have you compared it to Germanic, like Saxon or Frankish mythology, which is like super, basically the same thing? I'll get in trouble for saying that, but basically it's the same thing.
I haven't looked. I'm just now starting to discover sort of the other mythologies. Like some of my good friends over at, I think it's called, the Northern Myths podcast. They actually did a whole series on the Kalevala, which is the national mythology of Finland. And I've been looking into Celtic mythology lately as well, which is super interesting. But I haven't really gotten to any sort of the like Frankish, some of those minor mythologies. But I would definitely agree with you in that it's kind of the same.
It's like I'm going to get in trouble here. But it's basically like, Tyr is Thor. Oh yeah, because it even kind of sounds similar. Vodan is Odin, and. Yeah. So I got in trouble when I oversimplified, because I did it on my Saxon episode. They were like, how dare you compare because I think like it's Odin that has one eye, kind of like in the Marvel movies. I don't know if that's, you know, I think that's right. But in Germanic, if I'm not mistaken, it's Tyr. It's Thor. Like, well, if you watch Ragnarok, that's now Thor has one eye. And I was like, huh. Like, actually, when I was watching the movie, I was like, wait, are they... No, they're just being stupid Hollywood. But but they were onto something, because I think in the... And maybe I'm saying the wrong thing now, but I instantly had a person jump on Twitter and be like, how could you compare Thor to Tyr? Obviously, you know, what, just because they both are the War of God and the War of Thunder and they carry a big sword, you know, but there's like the same story of like this mythical sword, kind of like an Excalibur type of story, but different. And something, but yeah, there was something where it's like, no, Tyr is, he has some things in common with Odin and blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay, guys, you know, for the listeners out there, if you want them to learn or, you know, be able to categorize things in their head, just say this is an oversimplification, but Thor equals Tyr, Vodan is Odin, and on down the line. They did, yeah, like what Germanic speaking, they all kind of came from like the island of Gotland and southern Sweden, and just like, you know, Goths came 400 years later, or I mean, it's just like different waves of the same peoples. So sue me, you know, for oversimplifying, but I do love that stuff. Like I have some books of just that, just stories of that.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. That's one of the things, like I said, that got me into the Vikings in general was Norse myth. So I actually, yeah, it's just so fascinating.
Are you paying attention to a bit of the revival now in places like Iceland? Yeah. And
it's a bit
of a nationalist thing, and it's often a bit of a racist thing, to be honest. But the fact that there's interest in it is fascinating. I'm kind of like, you know, with one eye, I'm looking at what Iceland is like. They're bringing their old religions back in some form of like neo-pagan, you know, neo-Norse sort of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think, like, of course, unfortunately, there's like super extremists, you know, who are like taking an interest into it and sort of warping it to fit their agenda. But I think,
unfortunately, you do instantly come across that when you look into this, which is sad. Yeah.
It is sad, yeah, because I think that there's a lot of people are genuinely interested. I do think that there is a resurgence in the interest of these myths, and of course, like, that's one of the first things that you come across, which is what, like, shies a lot of people away, unfortunately, you know, from actually getting into the original sources.
This is kind of getting esoteric here, or a bit meta, but I think... That's one reason why the German version of this show is as successful as it is because I can, like, just be like, this is the coolest thing I ever heard about, and blah, blah, blah. And I'll be like, okay, now let me acknowledge the other person that thought this was damn cool was Himmler, you know, and he built the shrine here on this battlefield and blah, 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 blah. But, like, I ain't no Nazi, and y'all know this. So, you know, and the fact that I can, like, say this is cool, this is genuinely super fascinating. And, by the way, I'm not, you know, I'm not a bigot or into, you know, like, I'm not a neo-pagan, you know, or, you know. Then they kind of look at that and be like, damn, it is cool. You know, it's a crying shame there's a big Nazi shrine there. But, yeah, it is worth a pilgrimage to, you know, look at the museum and this and that. So, it's kind of like, I think as an outsider, maybe... we can just like acknowledge, like, dude, I would go to Sweden to look at this stuff. So it's okay to be a little bit proud of it. Just, you know, don't think you're better than other cultures or whatever. But
absolutely.
Yeah, you do see that. Like Iceland, I was reading some horrible articles on the. It's just like kind of sad because on the one hand, it's like there's a lot of interest and they're even like going to these like natural, like clear, especially in Iceland is a beautiful country. And so you might go to like some beautiful place, some meadow or whatever, some cliff or something, and to kind of do this like druidish sort of, I guess that's Celtic, it's not, yeah. But it does kind of reminisce of like neo-druidic kind of things that people do at like Stonehenge or whatever. And you kind of go in nature and summon spirits, or I don't want to oversimplify what they're doing, I don't really know, but kind of worship and pray, let's call it that.
Yeah.
And, but then you instantly notice like, and there's no getting around it, like half those guys are just like super white supremacists, and you know, it's like, the reason they're bringing it back is because they're like, oh yeah, Christian is a foreign influence. And I was like, oh geez, wow, you guys. It's kind of, that's kind of interesting. I was just wondering if you're kind of pay attention to that kind of stuff too, like the
definitely. Yeah, I definitely have to be careful with that. I was actually talking to another Viking history podcaster when I first started my podcast, actually, and we were just kind of talking about that in general, is because he was definitely like giving me a lot of pro tips for getting started. And he's like, if you like join Facebook groups or stuff, like do make sure that you really look into these people, you know? So.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to tell me. Man, history, man, I just blocked somebody yesterday. Like, it's just fresh in my mind. Because, History of Germany podcast, of course, you know. The same people that are like, less hominids, more Hitler. You know, they have like these big, like, Maltese crosses or whatever in their bio or in their name, in their bio. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, block.
Yeah.
I would get mentioned a lot on Facebook groups. People are just like, at History of Germany. And I'm like, no. And it's, you know, some Nazi rally. Some, you know, yeah, some like American neo-Nazi thing, and I'm like, no, block the whole group, block the person, block everybody. I got a lot of that. Yep, actually, yeah, that's kind of, I never thought about that, but yeah, you would get some of the similar stuff. So
that's right.
Yep, but no, and then I think being a trustworthy source, where if Noah or Travis says, no, this is kind of an interesting phenomenon, like this is okay to look at, just Don't be racist about it, but an old cultural revival, like how is that a bad thing, you know?
So, right. Know. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, you want to talk some history? I don't know. It feels like we're talking a lot about TV and
we could get into it.
I was looking up. I was trying to find like the oldest sort of. So there was some Viking settlements in Germany too. And yeah. I found this one called Haithabu or Haithabu. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. And I found a long article in German. But it looks like already in 770, it's really close to the Dänemarka. And that was like, this is like Harold Bluetooth built this like, almost like Hadrian's Wall across the whole southern border of Denmark to keep out Germans or any, you know, invaders. And really close to there, then, the Vikings built this town called Haithabu or so, on the Schlei River. That was only there for like 300 years, and then it was destroyed by other Vikings in 1066. So, have you heard of that? This was like, let's say, 20 years before Lindisfarne or something.
Wow. No, I haven't actually heard of that. I suppose we're...
Me neither. I mean, it's just, definitely just a tiny little settlement, but I was like, okay. So, and keep in mind, this is near the Danish border, so this wasn't necessarily like Germany. It's Germany today. So that's why historians say, oh, this is, you know, the oldest Viking settlement we have. But at the time, I'm like, yeah, it might have been, you know, you could be just as Danish there as anything else.
Yeah, so. And I think, like... where a lot of people's knowledge starts on Vikings, obviously, is with the dawn of the Viking Age, you know, arguably 793. But it's interesting. Yeah. We talked about sort of like Germanic speaking people's mythology in general. Is actually a lot of these sagas that we have where we hear of like the Norse gods and heroes and berserkers and all that cool stuff. Actually, those were written in like the 500s AD, 5 and 600s, which is like a long time before the beginning of the Viking Age. So it just goes to show you that the Vikings, or at least these sort of Norse people who had these beliefs, were around for quite a while before the Viking Age actually started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to go on a limb here, but I bet there's been a lot of, because we do have some Saxon stories and Saxon things, because that was like Charlemagne, so Charlemagne's campaign with the Saxons sort of ended 804, and this is like, there was Vikings kind of creeping up the Rhine at this point already, the Seine, Netherlands and Belgium, like they're like, Charlemagne knew about Viking. He was hearing reports of Viking raids already. But now the Saxons are really, that's like what I was saying about like Vodun and Tyr. And the fact that we call it Thursday and Wednesday. And that's all like those kind of Germanic Norse gods. And so I think you could probably do a little bit of a extrapolation as an academic and say like, okay, so we have like the snippet of this Norse legend, and we also have the Saxon or Frankish legend. Maybe we can, you know, fill in the blanks on some of the Norse stuff. And I bet some work like that has been done. And I bet there's always a grain of salt or like some caveat of like, we, you know, hey, this is, you know, it sounds so similar that we bet there's similar beliefs, but who knows?
Yeah.
I guess I'll say real quick. So the Franks were converted way back. I'm going to say the wrong thing because I'm just guessing, but let's call it 600 AD. Okay. Maybe it was only 700. Charlemagne was crowned emperor 800. That's an easy date to remember, like Christmas of the year 800 AD. And bam, there's already, Lindisfarne, like you said, was 793. And that was like 24-hour CNN news coverage, like, oh my god, there's these people that just, like, you know, pretended like we were, you know, cut through us like butter, and right. Oh my god. And, you know, because Lindisfarne is a secluded monastery, so this is like not, it shouldn't be easy to even get to, and like here these boats just show up and just, you know, plunder this like weakly defended thing because they're so secluded and because it's a monastery. Like, who's gonna, you know, kill a Christian bunch of monks? Well, Vikings are, but at the time this was just like, that's the apocalypse. Honestly, like Lindisfarne was described as the beginning of the end of times.
Yeah.
Like, so this is, you know, 7 years later, Charlemagne gets his crown. So this is the exact, this is kind of that time. And the Franks were only recently Christian. Like, there's Karl Martell and the whole, the Merovingians and everything. They converted way back. And like they were the defenders of the church. Like, they got that title because they had campaigns, like super bad campaigns that they lost against, like Spain, like Muslim Spain. So, they were kind of the first people to get a defender of the church, but they were only Christian for like 100 years, and then they were fighting these pagans to their east. Every year Charlemagne would go out for 30 years in a row and slaughter Saxons in this horrible religious genocide, and it's you can't call it anything else. It was like this planned like slaughter of women and children every year for 30 years until the Saxons were converted at sword point. And so the Frankish laws saying you cannot do this and you cannot do that, that actually, that's one of the sources where we know, Saxons used to do this. So when the Franks converted the Saxons, it was actually an additional, it wasn't just like, I believe in, you know, the Nicene Creed, kind of like, I believe in God, his son, Jesus, you know, blah, 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 the Virgin Mary, blah, blah, blah. They would also say, and I denounce devil and Votan and Tyr. And so it wasn't just like, I denounce the devil and all, you know, and all his minions. It was like, no, they would mention all these specific, they'd have to like, and mention all these specific pagan gods. So like, we know like, oh, they worship Frida and Votan because Franks said they're not allowed to anymore. And you can't gather in the woods or whatever. So I guess they used to do that, you know, so you can extrapolate from some of those sources. That's that time. That's like not that long after Lindisfarne. 820, I have written down, is the first Frankish mention of a huge attack. So 30 years, let's say, after Lindisfarne. Have you talked about raids up like to Paris or Hamburg or any of that stuff?
No, I've been doing a lot of research on that lately, and there's a lot of very famous raids. In 845, they actually besieged Paris, and they successfully plundered it. I know a lot about those, and I know I've been meaning to get into those eventually, but I've been focusing a lot on sort of the mythology and then just covering a lot of the general topics and sort of setting the stage for like chronological development, you know?
You want to get a feel for who the Vikings were, so right. That when you say, okay, they showed up, like 700 ships showed up the Seine and surrounded Paris, that they're like, oh, okay, yeah, like it's these people, and oh, that's not a good thing.
Right.
I think even the Annals of Fulda is one of the first, because that was like, who wrote that? Where the hell is Fulda? Fulda's in Germany, I think, but So I guess it was some monk or so in Germany, but because I know that they mentioned this, they mentioned the Raid of Paris. It's one of the earliest sources of. So 84, is that even the same? When was the Annals of Fulda written?
So that is a chronological history, goes year by year, okay, and I think it starts in 8...
It's like right then.
Does it start in 838, I want to say?
Yep, I have that date in front of me. Yep. So right, yeah, so just like perfect timing, like 8 years or so before, 7, 8 years before the Raid of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a story. Yeah, so if, when you do that episode, I'll have to... That's got to be something. That's another one of the, like, end of days, like, we're going to die sort of situation. Right. Right? These pagans at the gate.
Yeah.
Same with, let's see, Hamburg. Yeah, that was the same year. Yeah. So Hamburg up the... Hamburg is... What river is that on? It's the delta, like, the end of the Elbe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Elbe without looking, just, like, cocky without looking at a map. So don't sue me if I'm wrong, but, so that's a totally different, the Seine, I don't even know where the Seine runs into. Does the Seine go into the Rhine maybe? I don't want to say the wrong, or does it go straight north? I don't know. Cause I feel like the Seine kind of goes, east-west more than,
I want to say straight through Paris, doesn't it?
Yeah. So in Paris, I know it's east-west and that, you know, so I'm like oversimplifying, like, oh, I bet it's an east-west river. Might just be like one, you know, yeah. In any case, yeah, so they're already, years before this, there was kind of like some reports of like, oh, they're, you know, not just England, but now they're also in Netherlands and Belgium, which at that time was all just Frankish Empire, really.
Yeah.
It's actually, like, Belgium is kind of the Frankish core area. That's kind of where they start, like, way back in the Merovingian days before they, like, Charles Martel and them, like, just conquered all of France. That wasn't Charlemagne. Like, Charlemagne inherited that, and then he conquered all of, like, Italy and Germany and all that. Yeah, let's see. Then we do have, yeah. So now it's kind of like every year. Starting with, like, Paris, and then every year you get Norman raids. There is a guy called, in 850, Rorik the Northman.
Yes.
Oh, we even call... Okay, now you might even call him Rorik of Dorstadt, which is bad because Dorstadt is one of the places he plundered. And I got this map in front of me, which I think I stole from Wikipedia. Maybe German Wikipedia. Yeah, German Wikipedia, because it's all in German. It's like Vikinga, Laga, Vikinga, Überfall. But just looking at Dorstadt, so if you know... so Utrecht is in, Holland, Belgium, I don't really care right now, but Nijmegen is in Belgium, whatever, but Dorstadt, there's like, it was raided in 34, 38, 36, 37, 40, 46, 47, 57, and 63.
Yeah.
Now, what does that mean? That means, do you think that Dorstadt, that the Kaiser was not funding their, like, enforcement, like their fortifications and their walls and, you know, more and more like bigger city gates and this and that? No, you bet they were. They were rebuilding frantically, desperately, as if their life depended on it every single year. And every single year it didn't. Not every single year, but over a 30-year span, 834 to 863, 8 times in 30 years, it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter what they did. The Vikings came and just plundered the town.
Especially when you get rivers flowing, like, directly into towns, that's where you really get screwed, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't really do much about it. Because, honestly, most of the medieval armies at the time lacked a proper navy. So the defense precautions would have been simply to build, like, fortifications and towers on either banks of the river, which the Vikings could just turn around and raid someplace else if it was, you know, too much to deal with.
Yeah, that's, man, that just must be, that really is the end of times. I mean, yeah, if you just, like, know the scourges could just come back at any time. I kind of want to go through this map just a little bit. So there's the Maas, the Rhine. I don't know if they run into each other, but they come out in the North Sea really close, if they're not the same. And then... the Mosel is a really famous, like, all Germans know. Like, I remember, I went to school in Germany in grade school, and I remember, like, having to learn the rivers. And there's even, like, these rhymes going, oh, I don't remember, oh my god. But it was, like, the Mainz, the Inn, the something flow to the Donau, fließen zur Donau hin, the Isar, the Lech, the something flow away from the Donau, fließen vom Donau weg. Yeah, Lech fliegt vom Donau weg. Something like that. Like, there was a rhyme that you can learn, because I lived in Munich, which was on the Isar, which flowed into or flowed out of the Donau, Danube, but wasn't on the Danube directly. But yeah, so kind of, like, I remember, I've heard the Mosel before, but you can go, so Germany, that's the thing about Germany, honestly, is Germany is two rivers. That's not true. There's, you know, the Elbe, where Hamburg is on. Hamburg is on the North Sea, but the Elbe cuts straight across, and there a side river is the Vltava, and the Vltava goes all the way to Prague, which is the capital of the Czech Republic. So, like, I lived there for 10 years, and I could have gotten on a raft and gone clear through former East Germany and, you know, all the way to Hamburg just by floating up the river. Wow. The same way, the Rhine, so Trier is almost, it's almost Belgium. It's not quite as far south as France, maybe, but it's really deep into Germany, and the Rhine goes way, way further. It just cuts straight south. Like, all, you know, the biggest density of Germans live on the Rhine. Cologne, Bonn, all those, and then the little side rivers is just like, all those, that's the Ruhrgebiet. It was the big industrial part. Like, that's where all the coal mines were in the 19th century. So, but even 1,000 years ago, like, that's the border with France. That's where a lot of Germans lived. And the other side is the Danube. Vienna is on the Danube, like cities like Regensburg and Nuremberg and all these, like northern Bavaria, Franconia, kind of that area. And the Rhine and the Danube almost touch. Like, not really, relatively speaking. As an American, it's like, within the area of, I mean, California is bigger than Germany. So, like, within one county, they almost kind of come together, and there's Lake Constance and all that. So, I mean, now there's canals. You can go clear through France, and you can go clear through Germany. So you can go by boat from the North Sea to the Baltic or the Mediterranean, if people don't know that. You can go from the Atlantic to the Mediterranean clear through France. I don't know if people know that or not. So, even in the days of Vikings before the canals, yeah, like, Europe is pretty navigable by a flat boat, which Europeans didn't really utilize that way, but Vikings sure figured that out.
Yeah.
And of course, don't forget, like, for short stretches, Vikings would just pick up their boat and carry it across land. It was that kind of a light enough thing. So, yeah, it's not like you had been on a major navigable river. It was like, yeah, they could kind of go up, not creeks, but go up pretty narrow passages, or just carry it a while. Carry it up around waterfalls and sit back down. So,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, Trier is a big university town. I think it was founded by Romans, I believe. Cologne definitely was. Romans called it Colonia, like the colony. So Trier definitely is a university, like an ancient university town. They got there. That's hundreds of miles into German territory, up rivers. So, yeah, that's not nothing. That's like, we're all talking like 880s. Yeah, wow. Maastricht 881, Andernach, Bonn, Cologne 881, Trier 882. So really, just like, yep. Just kind of. Zanten is an old German, an old Roman town too, which Vikings plundered. The Vikings would also build winter camps. This is kind of like maybe why there was a natural progression of like settling longer and longer and then just setting up shop and founding cities like Dublin, is that they did set up winter camp. So like they actually conquered Utrecht and Nimwegen in a way and stayed the whole year and then left the next spring. Yeah, so that's kind of...
Yeah, overwintering is what they would do, because raiding season was in the spring and summer, as they, you know, couldn't travel over the frozen water. So what they would do is they would overwinter in the places that they raided, and that's where people really got nervous, you know, because these Vikings essentially just built camp right next door to all of these regular towns and villagers, and then when the spring came, you know, they could get back in their longships and continue sailing up and down the rivers and raiding everyone. So
yeah, that's just man, but yeah, that's just that is the end of the world if you're a local. Yeah, like Vikings. Oh my goodness, that's just kind of doing whatever they want for the cold winter months, eating a bulk of the food, no doubt. You know,
right.
So, now this, I don't know. I don't want to jump around too much. I don't know if you got something else to add to the kind of raiding up rivers sort of thing, because I want to kind of. The thing that's interesting is that it wasn't just Normandy and France where the king was like, okay, fine, stop raiding Paris, you know, take this county and we'll make you a count, kind of thing, or a duke or whatever. It's often like a duke right under the king. And that also happened in Germany. So I believe the very first Viking king who was baptized was Harald Kluck, maybe, in 826, which is very early, if you think about that. Now, Ingelheim am Rhein, that's a city on the Rhine, he became an under, like, that became kind of his own kingdom. Like, they call him a Viking king because, so he was under the king Ludwig, which was... That must have been a French king in 820. Oh, well, a Frankish king, Ludwig. Yeah. So, So Charlemagne's empire split up and whatever. So he could have been in Lotharingia was kind of the Rhine area. I don't know. It was three, East Frank, West Frank, and like Lotharingia. But in one of those three kingdoms, this Harald became a sub-king. Like really, he kind of had his own fiefdom. And being a sub-king in Germany is just like how they ran things. Because remember, you have the Kaiser, the Emperor, and then you might have the Kingdom of Bohemia, the Kingdom of Bavaria, the Kingdom of Prussia was a kingdom. So you'd have like, you could have kings under kings is my point. But that was really early, actually. And of course, if you're going to be an under king, you do have to be Christian. Like, there's no way you can be in... That was already, like, super clear. Like, they were defenders of the church, / later they were the Holy Roman Empire. You can't be called the Holy Roman Empire if you have Norse, pagan kings. So, I know you talked about that, too, on your podcast, kind of the... So before they started to baptize, either get baptized or baptize themselves for political reasons, or hey, even maybe spiritual reasons, we don't know. You know, maybe there was a couple honest to God conversions there. But I kind of get the sense that a lot of that was either by force or like a king gets baptized and it's like, by the way, y'all are Christians now. There's the church. Line up. You know, we're doing this. Or. The king himself for political reasons, like, oh, you're going to give me a whole county? I guess I can go to mass and do that whole thing. So, but hey, let's say there was a couple of people that genuinely found the Lord. I don't know, but that did start to happen. Now, I think you talked about even before they baptized, they started to convert, there was already some influence of Christianity. Or do we know this even? Like, how did this mingle? What did they think of Christians that they were plundering? Like, because imagine, so they come back with all their raid and plunder, and including like a bunch of like gilded and silver crucifixes and stuff. Do they just melt that stuff down? Do they turn that into, you know, what do they do with that?
Well, in the beginning of the Viking Age, I don't think that the Vikings would have really cared about Christians whatsoever. They probably would have,
It was just a weaker... Yeah, because it was like the religion of their victims.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. You know, just melting down the crucifixes into, being made into coins and everything else like that. But towards the end of the Viking Age, when you see kings like you said, Harald Kluck... like you said, I don't really know if it was for like personal reasons, personal conviction, but I know that a lot of the kings in Northern Europe were very much pressured to convert to Christianity because, Christianity was really becoming the newest social club of the upper class. It was really becoming the state religion of many countries. And if you have a country like, what is modern day Norway or Northern Germany or something, and you have these leaders who still believe in paganism, then you will not get along very well militarily with the other Christian kingdoms, So,
in terms, like, yeah, even like just for like a defensive pact, kind of like it'll be more likely that I'll help you if right. you're also that makes sense. Well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But in the beginning, I think the Vikings probably would have seen it as, you know, just simply a weaker religion to that of their mm-hmm. own, especially because the medieval Christian, then that's one of the, so monasteries were never really defended with, you know, armies of men because, well, number one, they didn't have to be. They actually believed that by building them, you know, on the coastline that water would have been a huge barrier, which is, of course, like the Vikings' totes on opportunity.
It's their super highway, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. But also, they believed, the medieval Christians believed, to defend the house of God with an army of men would have been blasphemous to God, you know?
Yeah, unnecessary, exactly, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. Like, and of course, I'm sure the Vikings are like these monks, you know, running around in, you know, sackcloth robes and with their heads shaved, can't even defend themselves, you know. And of course, they would probably seek to honor their gods, their various, like, what you would call their gods of war, you know, Thor and Tyr and maybe even Odin through war. So they mm-hmm. definitely were probably... you know, like, wow, we hit the jackpot. These monks can't even defend themselves, and here we are raiding them. And of course, besides the massive amounts of wealth that they would have accumulated at these monasteries, religious, you know, textiles, mm-hmm. gold, silver, communion wine, they actually would have enslaved the monks themselves because the slave market was huge at the time. So the monks, the healthy, well-fed monks, would have definitely fetched a good price at the slave market, I think.
That is, yeah, that is also depicted in the Vikings series, like the History Channel fiction stuff.
Yeah.
And then, I'm sure it really breaks down quick, like... yeah, in fact, I'm just remembering now as I'm saying it, like, he turns pagan and he hates God and whatever. Now the thing is, that's kind of an interesting, on the flip side, when they started to convert, and I kind of know the answer to this, like, I know, when you see, like, the Celts, let's say, the insular Celts kind of converting to Christianity, that's where we get this really rich tradition of, like, Celtic crosses and, you know, Celtic, you know, like that kind of symbology in Ireland. And also those illuminated manuscripts is like those had a big Celtic influence too, which then the Vikings raided. But then, so I imagine there was still in like art and depictions and this and that. I bet you could, there was still a big, very big Norse influence, even in like if they made a crucifix, you'd be like, oh, you can tell this came from, and I don't remember exactly if I'm thinking of Saxons or Franks or what, but there was definitely, like if they minted their own coins or something, it'd be like, ah, that looks like, that Jesus looks suspiciously like Odin kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you mean. And, like, you certainly see that in the Stav churches of, like, Norway and Sweden is after, you know, the Viking Age had ended and everyone was becoming a Christian. These, they were, like, essentially very similar to the cathedrals of the rest of Europe. The Christian cathedrals were as they were built, like, that sort of traditional church steeple with the mm-hmm. cross on the top. But they were made of wood, which is very Scandinavian. Yeah. You know?
Still a Viking longhouse. It's just got exactly. a steeple on it or something.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like the Great Hall. It's the great, the idea of the Great Hall. It hasn't changed.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And we do see, it is kind of neat that it's like those cultures in Ireland and Scandinavia that always, in a way, had their own spin on... even Catholicism, but then of course, like Scandinavia in particular, like, you know, fast forward 500 years, and they're all Protestants in the Reformation, and in the 30 Years' War, they're all anti-Catholic and stuff, and it's kind of like, that distance to Rome alone, I think, just kind of they had their own spin on things, even when they did try to emulate Italy more and more in later years. Definitely their own culture for sure.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So just a little fun random side note fact thing is one of the main sources, one of the two primary sources we have for the Norse myths, is called the Prose Edda, and it was written in Iceland by an Icelandic Christian in the 13th century, so the 1200s. And he, what he does, and his name is Snorri Sturluson. What he
love
does,
it. I love it, Snorri yeah, Sturluson. That's awesome.
Yeah,
right, sorry.
No, it's good. But what he does is he actually. And this is a very tolerant attitude of a medieval Christian, you know, because like we talked about earlier, you had folks like Charlemagne threatening to kill people if they didn't convert to Christianity. But it's interesting because what he does is he actually takes a lot of these stories of Norse myth, a lot of the different myths, and he composes them all together, you know, the religion and history of his people, essentially, of his ancestors, the Vikings. And what he does is he puts the myths together and compiles them in what we have today is known as the Prose Edda. And it's interesting to note that Christianity had a very established canon at this time, you know what I mean? Like a canon of, if you want to get like theological, of religion, you know, they had the various councils of, you know, Chalcedon, Nicaea, where they were voting on things to what to put in the Bible. And he wanted to do that sort of with Norse myth, obviously not from a paganism standpoint, but he thought that it was important to preserve the
very much a Brothers Grimm sort of idea.
Like, it is.
Let's write down these folk stories in a way, but also like, yeah, let's and is like the Brothers Grimm also kind of traveled Germany and would hear very many different versions of the same story and kind of average it out when they wrote it down, which makes me think of that.
And like you said, averaging it out is because that's what he wanted to do, is really establish in a way a canon of Norse mythology. He wanted to make sure that everything was in agreement. If this character did this and this myth, that it along with this and this myth and that whole thing. So that's just a little side note. It's very, very interesting, is like sort of how the Vikings, like, you know, abandoned their pagan ways, or the people, the Norse people in general, that they had been practicing for so, so long, hundreds and hundreds of years. And it seems on the surface like they were just very quick to convert to Christianity. Well, here they are worshiping, you know, Thor and Odin for hundreds of years, but then along comes Christianity and everyone's converted. And I actually talked to Caroline Larrington. She's a professor of medieval literature at Oxford, and she made an excellent point in one of the interviews on my show, and is that you know, the upper class would have been very quick to convert to Christianity, as, you know, it had a lot of personal gain to them. And perhaps it might have been easier for a person of wealth to trust in God, which is, of course, one of the principles of Christianity. But the average, you know, peasant, the average Viking farmer, probably wouldn't have been so quick to give up their pagan ways. And we actually see evidence of them worshiping Jesus at the same time as them praying to Odin, you know?
There you go. Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah. You know, I can totally imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of not a very immediate conversion, which is, I guess, it makes sense. And, you know, the Vikings, one of the things that's super interesting is you see so many Christians, you know, who always wear cross necklaces, cross pendants. One thing the Vikings did is, and we found hundreds and hundreds of these all over Scandinavia, is they would actually wear an amulet of Thor's hammer around their necks to, you know, because Thor was kind of the god of the average man, the god of the farmer, if you will. Mm-hmm. That's just, it's super.
That's
super
very cross-like. That's it crazy. Is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. That's almost kind of like, yeah. Because I want, even the symbols of, I know it was way before the Viking, but the early Christians had like the symbol of like a fish or something just totally different rather than like a guy hanging on a cross. So that also kind of came in over the centuries. Like that didn't come out of Jerusalem or, you know, Palestine or whatever. So you know, there's parallels there with like the Celts kind of making it their own thing and all that, so that's just kind of interesting too. I guess then we're kind of, you know, we can kind of talk about the end of, you know, what did happen, but I think we already kind of covered that, which is they just started to settle down and become less raiding Vikings and more just like, we, you know, founding cities and agricultural and, you know, planting crops kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So the Viking Age really, a lot of people would say, and I think it's right, that the Viking Age ended in 1066 with William the Conqueror, you know, in the Norman invasion, as well as the total spread of Christianity. So some of the things that mark the end of the Viking Age is when you see less and less like chieftains of bands of Viking warriors, you know, and you see more and more kings emerging and establishing proper kingdoms, and then eventually establishing modern day countries such as Denmark and Norway.
I was going to say Denmark. So there's some crazy trivia out there. Denmark is the oldest monarchy, second only to Japan in the world, or as old as the emperor in Japan, but definitely by far the oldest in Europe. And they almost go back to Charlemagne. They'd go back to Harald Bluetooth.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is 11th century, like right here. It's like 10th or 11th century, something like that. And so exactly what you're saying. Like, not only did that happen, but the Kingdom of Denmark today is kind of, you know, it's the Danish flag is the oldest flag on earth. That is the oldest national flag. And it's definitely the oldest royal family in Europe. And that's Denmark. Like, we're straight up talking about, you know, those kind of Norse, like, people settling down and forming a normal, quote unquote, you know, Christian kingdom in Europe and kind of joining the European community, if you will. Yeah, and we do see, yeah, I mean, not kind of like, not quite like all of England being conquered by Normans, or a chunk of France being broken off as Normandy, or Normans conquering a third of Italy, or almost half of Italy, but that did happen to some degree in Germany, too. Like, Vikings were given off little chunks of fiefdoms, you know, to create peace. Maybe to some lesser degree, like,
and money too. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely got paid off, and yeah, tributes and all that. Now, like, genetically speaking, if I have Norse in me, then it's probably because I'm Scottish and Irish, and less like German and French, or, you know, like, that's probably, like, I took a DNA test, and yeah, I do have Scandinavian in me. Even I have a Finnish ancestor. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, none of the family records kind of bear that out. And I was like, oh, well, okay. It could be some Norman thing. And because it's just like, it goes, like, my family is just Scotland all the way down. So I was like, oh, yeah. But the genetics is like, oh, okay. Yeah, definitely some Scandinavian there.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And it's interesting to note as well as, and I would have to look up this article again, but I think it's something like 10% of people living in Iceland can actually trace their ancestry back to England. And of course, the notion is that the Vikings, you know, would take English women off away, you know, and then they would have children.
I thought you were going to say, like, they can all trace their lineage to, like, Leif Erikson or something. Like, because there's only 500,000. Is that right? Is there only 500,000 Icelanders? It's a really sparsely populated country for, it is. You know, for being a 1,000-year-old country, colony, whatever. But yeah, I don't think I had anything else. Is there anything else you kind of wanted to, like, touch on or mention?
No, man. Yeah, it was great talking to you. I love this. I love this stuff. And, like, researching for this podcast episode was super fun for me because, you know, a lot of people don't think about what the Vikings were up to in Germany. They just kind of think about, you know, the Vikings in England and in France and especially in, you know, the British Isles. So this was really a great opportunity for me to broaden my horizons as well. And I love talking about the mythology and that whole sort of thing. So it was great to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, I think maybe it's just Germany's like less blatant, like with place names and stuff. But yeah, between the Rhine and the Danube, man, Vikings could get pretty much everywhere. So again, let me just say, so everybody can find it in the show notes. Also, I'll have links to thehistoryofvikings.com. That's where you can find Noah's shows. There's also, he's on iTunes, of course, The History of Vikings. What are you on? Yeah, where else can people find you?
Yeah, so you can find me basically anywhere where you listen to your podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes. Feel free to
You have a Facebook page?
No, I actually don't have a Facebook page, ironically, which I should probably get back into that again. But I do have a...
Arguable. It's not. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I was kind of avoiding Facebook like the plague after a while, just because it was like kind of a learning curve. And with all of the sort of things going around about Facebook, I was like, oh, okay.
I've seen a lot of people shut their pages down, actually. Kind of, yeah, kind of just like out of political reasons or this or that. So
Yeah,
you are on Twitter. History of Viking on Twitter. Yeah,
at History of Viking, that's right.
Man, you know, think of an excuse to come back.
Yeah,
you're welcome,
man,
anytime. For sure. There is a whole nother episode with Noah and me on Noah's feed, which this episode are recorded like 2 months ago or so, and Noah's episode we just recorded today, so I'm just lazy with the editing process, but there should be a whole nother conversation between me and Noah, more about like podcasting itself and a glimpse behind the scenes of again, I guess, my history and me talking about myself, but also talking about the podcasting community and some advice on people just starting out or how the landscape has changed in the 5 or so years that I've been podcasting. I think that turned out to be a really good conversation. Noah's a really interesting character. I mean, you've heard him now, but I think just in the kind of more laid back, I cracked a beer. He's still a minor, but just to be able to kind of get to know Noah better, and he's only been podcasting as of today. He's only been podcasting for 4 months, and I think History of Vikings is just doing such a great job, and I see so much potential there, and the way he's doing stuff, and just kind of in his life himself. So I might even talk to him again for a third time on the Podcastnik feed. And by the way, there is a Podcastnik YouTube channel and a Podcastnik feed. Like, there's a new podcast called Podcastnik. It's on iTunes. It's on podcastnik.com. We introduce Imad and Yudit. Imad and his... he's our Arabic translator, but he's still not in safety. He's a Syrian refugee, but he's, because of his sexual orientation and his religious belief or lack thereof, he's, you know, he's been arrested, he's been interrogated and tortured, and just his escape from Syria is kind of an interesting tale. And so just to actually hear Imad's story from him himself was just fascinating. That's on the Podcastnik feed. Pete, we finally just like got to interview Pete and just kind of take a look at our co-host of History of Alchemy and Bohemian. So that's on the Podcastnik feed. Pete has been in a wheelchair since he's 11 years old, and he's seen the world, traveled the world as a Paralympic backup, like for the fencing team, and so, you know, lived in Prague for years now, and has Czech speaking kids and all that. Like, yeah, just his whole life is crazy, endlessly fascinating, and he's got new projects out, and yeah, so a glimpse. You did, of course, we interviewed, who is the other co-host of this show, History of Germany. So her whole story of recently moving to Regensburg and life in Germany and all that. So just getting another glimpse of the Podcastnik members. So besides my interview on Noah's show, you can listen to Podcastnik, the Podcastnik feed. And there's a kind of new content coming there. Another Africa episode is now there on the Podcastnik feed. So yeah, just for news and all the stuff that we're up to, because we're up to a lot, we're always doing something, stop by podcastnik.com, take a look at our new merch. We have great new designs, yes, brand new designs on podcastnikshop.com. That's all our t-shirts and new hoodies and new History of Germany designs, in fact. I don't want to spoil it because we have a graphic designer who's way more talented than we are, so I want her work to speak for itself, so just go check out podcastnikshop.com. And let's see. Yeah, we do have sponsors. They're in the show notes. You do really help out the show by supporting our sponsors, of course. Wow, yeah, lots going on. All right, but for now, auf Wiedersehen. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Is that what I always say? I don't even know anymore. But thanks so much for listening. And definitely this time, there's a lot of links in the show notes, so please have a look at that. And yeah, until next time. Next time is Hildegard of Bingen, a little bit of history of science, a little bit of history of visionary religion and all that good stuff in the Middle Ages on the History of Germany podcast. Dankeschön.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.